The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome back to First Take. We're coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17 in New York City. It is no secret at this point that Russell Wilson is open to taking his talents elsewhere, expressing interest in playing for the New Orleans Saints, who officially will not have Drew Brees now that he's announced his retirement. The Las Vegas Raiders, who publicly have said Derek Carr is their guy, and the Chicago Bears, who plan to make a big swing to acquire Wilson, that according to our Jeremy Fowler. Stephen A. Smith, which team should most want to trade for Russell Wilson?
Well, easily right now it's the New Orleans Saints. There's no question. And it's not just because Drew Brees is retired. It's because of what Russell Wilson brings to the table. He's not a completely inaccurate passer. He's pretty damn accurate himself. Plus, he can run with the football in ways that Drew Brees can never dream of. Plus, he still has Michael Thomas there as well. Plus, a versatile guy to rely upon in Taysom Hill, who can sit up there and sub at quarterback, but could also do some other things as well. When you look at that, along with Sean Payton, who's like 143 and 81 as a coach, winning nearly 64% of the games he's coached in New Orleans. I'm looking at the numbers right here since Peyton arrived, Max. He's been there since 2006, okay? 10 different times in that span, they have had a top five offense. How many times? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times they've been top three. Twice they've been number one. Once they've been number two. I mean, this man knows what he's doing on the offensive side of the ball. And then we sit there, we parlay that into a discussion about Russell Wilson in terms of his issues with Seattle. Well, you're not protecting him, number one. He's been sacked about 364 times, been hit over 1,100 times. He's tired of getting beat up by his offensive line, and he called them out. So what's the chances of him being better protected next year after calling out your damn offensive line in the offseason, Max? I would say that's in jeopardy. You got to take into account also the fact that what he's had an issue with Pete Carroll and his coaching staff, which included two of his sons, by the way, he had a problem with the fact that he felt like, hey, we weren't innovative enough, we weren't being creative enough, and the teams throughout the National Football League that were being successful were stepping up their game in terms of innovativeness and being a bit creative. Well, no one would ever accuse Sean Payton of being devoid in that category. The man takes risk. He's not exactly no risk it, no biscuit like Bruce Arians is in terms of that's not his adage or, you know, the phrase that he uses. But he coaches like that.
Offensive brain.
He coaches like that, and we know what he brings to the table. So if you're talking about Russell Wilson going someplace where you're going to have a shot at a Super Bowl, and more importantly, you're going to be in an offense that you enjoy leading, and then you combine that with the fact that the New Orleans Saints haven't won a Super Bowl, nor have they been to a Super Bowl since 2009. I mean, hey, that seems to be a great situation for him, particularly since Michael Thomas has something to prove since last year. Clearly, him and Drew Brees were not on the same page. He didn't play that much either. He got injury prone. So I would say the Saints is the perfect situation for Russell Wilson.
Saints are high leverage because they're ready to win a Super Bowl if they had better quarterback play. Not just then Taysom Hill, but then Drew Brees last year, who in recent years has worn down throughout the course of the season. There's an argument there. The better argument is for the Bears, because we're asking which team should most want to trade for Russell Wilson. If you married where he should want to go plus which team would want for him, I think the argument for New Orleans would be stronger. But the Bears have never had a great quarterback, ever. Not in my lifetime. Never. They won. The 1985 Bears were the greatest team of all time, right? Because the undefeated Patriots lost to my Giants, Stephen A., in 07. So the Bears, the 85 Bears, that's like the way in baseball they once said the 27 Yankees, where they don't even use the name of the Bulls. The 72-win Bulls team, right? That's the 85 Bears. And it's a football-starved town. They won a Super Bowl so bad. But even McMahon, they didn't have a great quarterback. You realize if you talked about the top three quarterbacks in the last, I don't know, 35 years for the Bears, Jay Cutler would be on the list. Think about that for a second. They need a quarterback in the worst kind of way. And while they don't have the offense of New Orleans, they have some decent offensive pieces. And they have a defense. and they have a tradition in terms of passion for football in Chicago that is unmatched. Russell Wilson, I said this about Deshaun Watson, I'll say it about Russell Wilson, who has a more team-friendly deal than Deshaun Watson. And the Bears are on his list? Russell Wilson, if he could win a Super Bowl in Chicago, would make himself a different kind of icon than almost anyone playing. And look, you know, pick your poison. You want to compete against Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. Neither one is easy. But I think the reward is higher if you can win a Super Bowl in Chicago. And I think Chicago needs the quarterback more. Taysom Hill can play some. The Bears need a great quarterback. They've never had one.
They desperately need one. You're absolutely right, Max. But what about Matt Nagy? Do we believe in him?
Not like we believe in Sean Payton.
That's what I'm saying. And that's what we talk about here. So it's a combination of not just who should want Russell Wilson, but who Russell Wilson should want. We can't ignore that because it's Russell Wilson that we're talking about here. And there's no way in hell that Russell Wilson should want Matt Nagy in Chicago more than he wants Sean Payton in New Orleans. Not to mention the fact that Sean Payton in New Orleans are playing in a dome. When that wind chill kicks in Chicago, it's like no other. You understand what I'm saying? It's like no other. So let me tell you something right now. I mean, I'm sorry, but if I got an opportunity to play in a dome in New Orleans, as opposed to playing in Chicago in December and January, that's nothing to think about.
That's slick of you. You know why? Because you just turned the question into where should Russell Wilson want? Who should most want to trade for him? Oh, yeah, Russell Wilson, you made the argument. What can I say? Right. The dome on with a great offensive line. The Bears need the Saints just coming off of Drew Brees. And by the way, Taysom Hill can play, and they can figure that out. Coach believes in Taysom Hill. He told us at the Super Bowl, and apparently he really does. Mm-hmm. The Bears need this in the worst kind of way. Also, you know, Sean Payton and the Saints and everything, I wouldn't say they're a more functional, ready-to-win team year in and year out than Seattle. That's about a parallel move. Like, Russell Wilson is not going to find, oh, I got out of Seattle. Now in New Orleans, everything's so much better. I don't know. They're kind of similar to me. But if you can win in Chicago, oh, and Chicago needs it more than anyone in the league. They need a great quarterback.
Okay.
All right. Stephen A. saying New Orleans for Russell Wilson. Max is saying the Bears. Good options, good problems to have. That's what I got to say.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Some very sad news here, gentlemen. One of the great middleweights in boxing history, marvelous Marvin Hagler, died Saturday at the age of 66. Hagler fought on boxing's biggest stages against his biggest names. Over 14 years as a pro, Hagler finished 62-3-2 with 52 knockouts. He once said, "If they cut my bald head open, they'll find one big boxing glove. That's all I am. I live it." Max, what is Marvin Hagler's legacy to you?
Well, first of all, when I heard about this and it was unexpected, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, I'm not used to reacting that way when athletes I admire pass. But I feel like a lot of people in my generation, and Steven and I are more or less of the same generation, this one hit hard. People, my eldest daughter said, yeah, Dad, because it makes you feel old. Because Hagler was the 80s. Like, Hagler in the 1980s, it's hard to explain to people who weren't in that generation, was Mike Tyson before there was Mike Tyson. He was not only the best pound for pound, but he was the baddest man on the planet, even though he was a middleweight. This guy was, he came up the hard way. Joe Frazier, the great heavyweight champion, once told Hagler, you have three strikes against you. You're black, you're southpaw, and you're good, meaning it's going to be hard for you to find fights. So you know what Hagler had to do? He had to go, to Philadelphia at one point in his career. He's from Brockton, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. where Rocky Marciano was from. He went to Philadelphia and fought all the other avoided black middleweights of the day. Bobby Boogaloo Watts, Willie the Worm Monroe, Eugene Cyclone Hart, Sugar Ray Seals, all these guys, and lost to a bunch of them the first time around and went right back in there with them and beat them. And then some of them he fought a third time and knocked them out. And by the time he emerged from that, he's ready for a title shot, and he cleaned out the middleweight division, involved in some of the biggest fights in that division's history, usually winning them. When he lost to Sugar Ray Leonard, he didn't think he'd lost, and many people don't think he really lost that fight. Stephen A., he never came back.
Pride.
He went to Italy, became an action movie star in Italy. I used to bump into Hagler, who was the nicest guy in the world, and he would speak English with a thick Italian accent.
Yep.
And then eventually he leaves Italy, and like his accent kind of goes. He was an original and an enormous cultural icon of the 1980s.
Greatest first round in boxing history, as far as I'm concerned, is Hagler versus Hearns. Hearns won that round, but he instantly lost the fight the minute, because he was, he gave everything he had, and Hagler kept coming. And obviously Hagler put him to sleep in the third round. We understand that. But what stands out to me about Hagler, outside of him owning the division, cleaned out the middleweight division, 80 to 87, undisputed middleweight champion of the world, 62-3, never, ever, ever got knocked out in his career. Avenged the loss to Vito Anafermo. You remember that when he came in. And
a draw. They gave him a draw that he should have won.
And then he came in. It was no draw the next time. Finished him off. But what really stood out in my mind was, at a time when boxing, obviously, we lamented the state of affairs as it pertained to promoters, Max, and the control that they had and what have you. And he got robbed in his eyes. He thought the split decision lost to Sugar Ray Leonard. He thought he obviously deserved that victory. And then years later, obviously, Sugar Ray wanted to fight him. Sugar Ray wanted a rematch. Obviously, people were clamoring for it. He said no, because he felt like, you're the champion. Somebody should have to come and take it from you. You don't give it to somebody else. I was the constant aggressor. I kept coming. I deserved to win that fight. That was his mentality. And a lot, based on a lot of pride and principled, you know this better than me. When he was stuck on something, if he believed it, you were not going to change his mind. And I had the pleasure of meeting him one time in Vegas. And I was the one that brought it up. He didn't bring it up. But he still to that day felt that he won that fight.
I can't repeat some of the things he's told me in language he's used.
He swore he would never fight again because he felt that the sport disrespected him by taking the title from him to Sugar Ray Leonard. But he was marvelous in every sense of the word. And then when you had an announcer that refused to call him marvelous, he legally changed his name to Marvelous. So you had no choice but to call him marvelous.
Sugar Ray.
He was special.
Sugar Ray Leonard was supposed to be, he was the next Ali in terms of fame and popularity, and he won a gold medal in the Olympics, and Hagler always watched him as a guy who had things handed to him. Sugar Ray Leonard, one of the greatest fighters of all time, but Hagler resented the fact that he was so blue-collar. Sugar Ray turned pro, made a ton of money, Hagler didn't. They fought for the title on the same card the first time. Sugar Ray wins it, Hagler gets ripped off in a draw. You know, every step of the way, Ray had it better than he did, he felt.
Yeah.
So when they negotiated for their fight, Sugar Ray said, you get more money, which Hagler wanted, but I want it 12 rounds instead of 15. And had it been 15, Hagler would have won the fight.
Yeah.
But his pride was so hurt by that, he never fought again.
That's right. Never fought
again. In spite of being offered close to probably $20 million for a rematch back then.
He was a principled man. Principled man.
Great to hear those stories. And obviously, our heart goes out to his family, all his loved ones that are really hurting today. Prayers are with them.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast.
We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Things just got real, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mr. College Basketball himself. It's Dickie V, baby. And it's official. The tournament's back. Now that you are gracing my screen, all is well. And I feel like life is getting back to normal. So good to have you with us. How excited are you that we have the tournament back?
I'm really excited. I mean, are you kidding me? Last year was a lost season. Molly, before we get going, I have to simply say this. I want to be your agent because you deserve five times as much working with those two guys. Are you kidding me? They're not paying you enough.
And now you throw Dickie V into the mix.
Your lips to God's ears. Oh, thanks, Dickie.
Yeah, you know, Dickie V. You know,
I think it's just great we got a tournament. It's super that we got a tournament, Molly.
Listen, it's always great to see my brother, Dickie V. Always great to see you. You're awesome, baby, with a capital A. You know how it goes. But let me ask you this. Before we get into the particulars of March Madness, could you put into perspective how this year has been for you in light of the fact that obviously we don't see fan participation the way we did in the past because of the coronavirus pandemic? What has this season been like for you, the face of college basketball spanning decades?
You know, Stephen A., obviously not being at games is really something that we don't enjoy. However, when you think about the pandemic, I really thought there was a time in the season where they might stop playing. So the fact that we were playing is a positive. But, you know, let's put it all in perspective. I mentioned it yesterday morning. I was having breakfast, and a guy came up to me, and he said, you know, you guys talk about how tough it is with the players and all with the pandemic. So I'll tell you about toughness. A friend of mine lost his wife and to the COVID-19. So when we put this in perspective, over 500,000 people have lost their lives. We think about all of those that have lost jobs, people at ESPN, people I've got to admire and respect, great producers, directors, people behind the scenes have lost their jobs. So when we think about all that, yeah, it's tough for the players. And I salute the players. I salute the coaches. I salute the trainers, everybody involved, the administrators, to make it happen that we're going to have a March Madness. I think that is a positive. So from that standpoint, you know, I look at our problems not being here, doing the games from home. It's tough when you do it at home. You're not next to your partner. You don't know when to get in and out sometimes. But you know what? It's been a blast that we've had a tournament.
Meantime, it's as Molly said off the top, we see Jay Billis and Dick Vitale, and it just, you know, it's like a Pavlovian response. We start to salivate. Oh my God, here comes the tournament. And then you look at your brackets, you go, wait a minute, where's Duke? Where's Kentucky? What are your thoughts on the fact that those two powerhouse programs are not in the tournament this year?
Well, you know, obviously when you look at Duke and Kentucky, they didn't meet expectations preseason, especially when you look at Kentucky. Kentucky had the number one recruiting class in America. They got, many said, the number one impact player in terms of a transfer to kid Olivier Czar. But the situation was they didn't have a chance. Both these teams were so loaded with young players. And when they wiped out all the pre-conference games where you get a chance to get familiar with each other, the practice environment, all that set them back. And the veteran teams have stepped forward. But don't ever cry for Duke and Kentucky. They will be back. There's no doubt in my mind that next year, Duke is going to be a major factor. They were coming on strong. Had they played and didn't have COVID-19 and beat Florida State, I think we would have seen them in the tournament. I really believe that. I think they would have been in if they'd beaten Florida State. I mean, I see teams in there that don't have a resume as good. Kentucky was another story. It's been a struggle from day one, and some of the players did not live up to the billing coming out of high school, and I think many of those kids should be coming back to school, and if they come back and they have veterans added to the recruits, because John Calipari is going to recruit. He's a recruiting machine. So they'll be back again. First time since 1976, I believe it is, that both teams are not in the tournament.
Dickie V.
Yeah. Dickie V, guess what?
Better.
I don't care. Oh, go ahead, Stephen.
There's few better at noticing sleepers and finding sleepers in the NCAA tournament than you, sir. I would ask you this question. When you talk about that team flying under the radar, a team that's not being talked about, that everybody needs to pay attention to, because as you would say, they could be cut down the Nats. Who's that team, Dickie V?
Well, you know, Stephen A., I look at a team. You know, people will laugh at me saying this, but that's okay. I've been laughed at before. But I'm telling you, a team to keep an eye on. They're going to play UCLA at a play-in game. I'm talking Michigan State. Why do I say that? Any team that can beat in a matter of a week, you can go out and beat the likes of Illinois, Ohio State, and Michigan. They were 3, 4, 5 in the country. They beat those teams, and that's why they got in, even though they were 9-11 in conference play. Don't get me started with that, though, Stephen A., because I firmly believe, I always say this, the Mendoza line, if you can't be 500 in your conference, you don't belong in the tournament. The tournament's supposed to be for greatness, a great year. Well, if you're not 500 in your conference, that's not a great year. And, Mike, I don't care about how tough you're not here. Oh, well, the conference is loaded. They're loaded. We can talk here about Maryland, for example, 16-13, and they're going 9-11 in your conference. But they got in. Why? Because they beat Illinois. They beat Purdue. They beat Michigan State twice. So when I look at all of that, I could understand. But you know what I feel bad for, guys? I feel terrible for Coach Alexander. Yes, Coach Alexander of Belmont. 26 wins. The most any team had in Division I other than Gonzaga. No, Gonzaga had 26 as well. So they tied Gonzaga. 26 wins. 4 losses. And you're home and other teams are playing with 13 losses. That's got to hurt those kids because they don't get the opportunity when you're in the Ohio Valley Conference to play against all these teams that are quad one wins. Hey, you guys know, Max and Molly and certainly Stephen A., you guys know that if you roll the dice enough, you're going to get some wins. So if you play in a conference that's loaded with every game as a quad one in the Big Ten or the Big 12, and you roll that dice, you're going to get some quality wins. But my argument is you lay your head down on that pillow and you decided to play in that conference, well, you can't give me below mediocrity. 9-9, I could understand. But when you start getting below that, I really have worries. This year I gave an exception because how tough the Big Ten has been and because we're in a pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Bless you, Stephen A. Dickie V, let me ask you this. When we're looking at the 4-1 seeds right here, Gonzaga, Baylor, Illinois, and Michigan, which of those teams do you feel like is least likely to make it to the Final Four?
You know, Molly, you and I were talking before. I'm a little concerned about Michigan because of Livers being out. Mm-hmm. He's a valuable player. He's an NBA player. He'll be playing on the next level. And he's a kid out with a foot injury. And anytime you lose a key integral part of your rotation at this time of the year, that's a major loss. Juwan Howard's done an amazing job. To me, I picked him as my coach of the year and my awards I gave out. That's how good he's been. And next year he's got the number one recruited class coming in. But make it up. And the only way they can make that up with Livers, every player's going to have to accelerate and really elevate their games. Dickerson in the middle, Wagner, all those players, Smith, Brown, they're all going to have to step up. Eli Brooks, you know, you lose Livers, he's a kid that played in the Final Four before. But saying all that, I still have them surviving. For some reason, I feel that Juwan
like
is going to get those players to elevate their game. But the team I think that's going to have trouble, Baylor. I'm looking for Ohio State, I think, to beat Baylor. I don't think Baylor's been the same team as they were when they were 17-0 prior to COVID-19.
Your thoughts about Oklahoma State?
You're going to love Cade Cunningham, I'll tell you that. There's no doubt about it. You're going to see him next year. He's the real deal, Stephen A. He's the real deal. I had him in a game where he got 40 in a big rivalry game against Oklahoma. Made every big play. He's unselfish. He passes. Anytime he's on the floor, they got a chance to win. He's that good.
I wanted to ask you about Livers, but assuming that he doesn't come back or he doesn't get back to, you know, at the level he was playing, who do you therefore then have in your Final Four, Dickie V?
Well, you know, my Final Four, I still got Michigan in there. My Final Four guys, you know, the Big Ten has not won. The Big Ten has not won a national championship since 2000. That was the year that Tom Izzo cut the Nets down. They beat the Gators of Florida, Mateen Cleaves and company. They defended so well. But the Big Ten's been empty. Well, this year, you got 9 teams in the tournament from the Big Ten. This is a year they got to make some noise. However, they got one stumbling block in front of them, and that's a team from out there in the West Coast called Gonzaga, who is so real. But my Final Four, Gonzaga, I'm staying Big Ten with Michigan. As I told Molly, I got Baylor getting beat by Ohio State, and I'm looking at Illinois. Illinois is terrific as well. I think we're going to see a Gonzaga-Illinois matchup for the national championship, and when it's all said and done, I firmly believe, guys, I don't need RPIs. I don't need all those RPIs and all that stuff. I go to the VBDI, this Vital Ball Dome Index. I go to that Ball Dome Index, and that Ball Dome Index keeps spitting out to me just like they did. I tried to tell people at ESPN, they laughed at me when the VBDI said Tom Brady will win the Super Bowl. And they said that the Lightning would win the Stanley Cup. They laughed at me. Oh, really? Well, laugh now. I'm telling you, it's spitting out. Gonzaga, 32-0, and they will match what Indiana did in 1976, the last unbeaten team, the General Robert Montgomery Knight and that great Indiana team with Scott May, Wilkerson, Buckner, Benson, Abernathy. Yeah. I'll tell you, I'm Dickie all fired V. up. I'm just so happy we got a tournament.
Dickie V, I got mini Stephen A right next to me, my brother. Let me tell you something. I'm closing in on using the BDI myself. I'm a few years away from using the BDI myself. I'm closing in on it, Dickie V. But until then, I'm still going to hold out, and I'm going to let mini Stephen A sit up there and influence me. I'm with you. I'm with you on Gonzaga. I'm with you on Baylor. I'm with you on Michigan going to the Final Four. But I'm going with Oklahoma State. Coming out of the Midwest because of the brother you mentioned, Cade Cunningham. And that guy Boyd is a pretty damn good coach as well. Let me tell you something right now. I'm going with Oklahoma State going to the Final Four, but I'm going to stick with the 3 number ones. I understand Livers is a bit hurt. I think he's going to find a way to get himself back into the lineup. My man Juwan Howard will answer the call. They'll have the motivated. Had they won the Big Ten title, I would not have picked Michigan to go to the Final Four. But since they lost the Big Ten title, I think that they're going to get to the Final Four. And I'm sticking with Gonzaga and Baylor, and I'm going with Gonzaga to cut down the nets, to finish undefeated, to win it all. That's what I'm doing, Dickie V.
Yeah.
And so is many.
You're doing the right thing.
I don't think anyone's laughing at Gonzaga.
No, Gonzaga is so for real. See, hey, guys, let me tell you this. I think you got to have 3 parts of the court covered, the landscape. You got to have a point guard. They got Jalen Suggs, who's the best point guard in America, basically. You got to have a wing guy that can make threes. You got that Corey Kispert, an All-American. And you got to cover the 3-second area, have a post guy. And they got that in Drew Timmy. So when you cover those 3 parts of the court and then you have a role players, you got a chance to win. And this team, and there's something else they got going for them. Think about this. They got a great coach, but they played in a conference where they didn't have to go to war every day like the Big Ten. So those guys are rested. Now, the pre-conference, they put the hurt on Virginia. They put the hurt on Iowa. They put the hurt on Kansas. All those teams are in their section, and I really think that they're going to get through there, and I think they're going to win it all. Let me give you a little sleep. You know, I know you follow the NBA so religiously. I'm going to tell you this, Stephen A. Remember his name. Jason Preston, 6'4" point guard from Ohio University. They lost by 2 to Illinois during the season. They blew out Cleveland State, who everybody's talking about how good they have come on to be in the tournament. And they play Virginia. Now, Virginia, you talk about a tough situation. Yep. They can't practice until Friday. They then get on bus or plane, and they got to go right to Indianapolis, and they play on Saturday, and they play Ohio University. This kid Preston, 6'4 point guard, will be an NBA player. I'm telling you, watch him. Remember the name, Stephen
A. I like that nugget.
Preston.
We're keeping an eye on him. That's a good gem you're giving us, Dickie V. Max, can you give me your final four? Because I want to get Dickie V's thoughts on them.
I'll slip it in quickly. Ohio State, I think, is one of certainly the 10 best teams in the tournament. And I don't want to go chalk. I'll take Ohio State. Illinois and Gonzaga, I think everyone has. The Alabama defense is impressive to me. I like Alabama, so it's not chalk, but it's two ones and two twos. And I like you, Dickie V, like Gonzaga, to cut down the nets, as you would say.
You know, Max, you mentioned Alabama. I had them yesterday, and I had them on Saturday in the SEC semis and the championship. They beat two quality teams, beat Tennessee, and they had a real barn burner yesterday with LSU. And I'll tell you one thing. They do defend well. They do two things you got to do in tournament time. They defend exceptionally well. They attack you. And the second thing is they make threes. They'll make at least 10.8 threes per game according to their numbers. And anytime you can make the three ball and have guys that can do that, they can change a game quickly. So Alabama, I've been tossing and turning, to be honest with you. I came very close yesterday. We battled, my buddy and I, we battled about Alabama or Michigan. And I went with Michigan because I've seen Michigan, and if they play their A game, I think they're too strong, especially in the post with Hunter Dickinson, the 7-1 kid. I think that gives them
the edge. If they had livers, I would go with Michigan.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, Alabama's good, man. They're good.
You know what, Dickie V? The fact that you have Michigan in your Final Four, it's a nice consolation prize for me. I really would want UConn, but at least, you know, my household will be kind of happy with that. So we'll take it. We'll take Michigan in the Final Four, and that UConn just made it to the tournament for the first time in 5 years. So it's good news to have you on our screen, and it's good news to have the tournament back. And I will give you the final word here, sir.
Hey, let me just tell you this, Molly. You tell your man, Mr. Rose, okay? Somebody asked me, and I said it during one of the telecasts. Can this Michigan team, would they beat the Fab Five? I said, no way. Are you kidding me? And Eminem are a mismatch. No way can they beat the likes of Jalen and Mr. Weber and Mr. Howard, Jackson and King.
Special.
That team was as special as it gets. Even Stephen A. would love them. Hey, Stephen A., about this. You and I had a little fun wager when it happened. The two guys were drafted. I ask you now. You said, Dickie, no comparison. I want Simmons over Mr. Ingram. I'm not all convinced. I have problems with guys that can't make shots.
You talk about Ben Simmons over Brandon Ingram?
Yeah.
I'm taking Simmons over Ingram
all day. I'm taking Simmons.
All day.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Brandon Ingram can play. He's not a scrub. He belongs in this league. But Ben Simmons is a jump shot away from being LeBron James.
Yeah.
2.0.
Well, when's he getting a jump shot?
I understand.
When is he going to get the jump shot?
I understand.
Well, you don't have to be LeBron to be better than
Ingram. Hold it. Excuse me, Amaze. You're awesome with a capital A, Dickie V. But wait a minute now. That's not the Dickie V I know. Dickie V would say to me, excuse me, what you relying on just a jump shot for? Yeah, you got to shoot a jump shot. But what about all the other things that he does, Stephen A? What about the defense? What about the ball handling?
Yeah,
what about the basketball IQ? What about running the show, baby?
And something else. Dickie V, something else I would assume like about Ben Simmons, since he came in the league, has created more open looks from three for his teammates than anyone else in the NBA. The most.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. There's no question the guy's a great player. But I'm just telling you, I like guys that make shots. And Ingram's way better than people think. I think he's averaging like 20 points. He's like averaging like 22 points a game.
Simmons is going to play some center right now. With Embiid out, Simmons is going to play some center right now.
The Dickie
V. You brought up Steven with a capital A. You saw that side come out real quick.
Come on,
oh, my
man.
Goodness. This was a lot of fun. We could chop it up with you all day. So please come join us again soon. So happy
love
you,
Dickie
to have you
v.
with
love
us.
You,
so
buddy.
Happy to have the tournament back. You're the
fight
best.
For sore
we'll
eyes.
Talk soon.
Love you guys. Hey,
right,
Stephen
guys.
A., just tell people to go to DickVitale.com and help us raise money for kids battling cancer.
That's
through
right.
the V Foundation. You
Big
helped fight. Us big time last year.
Not my pleasure. You know I will.
Yep.
You're watching the ESPN Tournament Challenge Marathon, presented by Reese's.
I stopped counting birthdays a long time ago.
Another season! Another opportunity! Let's go win!
You have just witnessed history, New Orleans! Drew Brees is the NFL's all-time leading passer!
I've always tried to play this game with a great respect and a great reverence for it. I appreciate all that this game has given to me.
One of the best ever to do it is calling it quits. Drew Brees retiring after 20 seasons in the NFL. Boy, has he entertained us. Take a look at the accomplishments. First all-time in passing yards, completions, and completion percentage, and second to only Tom Brady in passing touchdowns. What a career. Pleased to be joined by our guy, Booger McFarland, Super Bowl champ. Boog, it's been too long. There you are. Great to see you, sir. We'll get to you in just a minute. But, Booger, I want to start with Max on this one. Max, do you think Drew Brees deserves to be in the top tier of best quarterbacks all time?
No, I don't. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He is an all-time great. But when you say the first tier, I'm thinking Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Aaron Rodgers. I believe Patrick Mahomes will be there. I think his peak is already there. We're talking about the best of the best. Certainly regular season Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning does have two Super Bowl championships. I'm talking about the guys who year in and year out, you looked at them and said, that's the best player in the league, or the best quarterback in the league, or one of the two best quarterbacks in the league. That hasn't been Drew Brees. Now, I take no pleasure in saying this. The day he retires, his beautiful family gives him the send-off, the whole thing. And any time Drew Brees is in a room, you can see why he's a leader, why he's a guy people want to play with and play for. He makes everyone want to be the best versions of themselves. I'm a huge Drew Brees fan, but this is my honest opinion. I mean, we're talking about the best of the best. Drew Brees set all those records because, number one, he's the most accurate ever. He's unbelievably accurate. But he also played in a passing era in a dome, and he had great longevity, and he was with a great head coach for a long, long time. So there's no taking away his greatness, first ballot Hall of Famer. But if we're talking about the inner sanctum among the inner sanctum of quarterbacks all time, he's not quite there for me.
The answer is yes. He's one of the all-time greats, top 10, maybe not top 5, but I don't want to take time away from my man Booger McFarland, who's been waiting anxiously to get on this airwaves and get at Max for that ridiculous decision. Of course, Booger agrees with me, not you, Max. Go ahead, Booger. Take it away, bro.
Well, I mean, Max, on one side of his mouth, he say he doesn't belong in the room, but then he say, yes, he's very accurate. Well, Max, let me tell you something. From a quarterback standpoint, there are a couple of things that you have to be. You have to be a great decision maker, okay, and you have to be accurate with the football. Drew Brees has done that at the highest level since we've been keeping statistical data at the position. Now, you can talk about talent, and you bring up Patrick Mahomes and some of the other greats like Elway and Manning. From a talent standpoint, I hear you. Drew Brees is a shade over 6 feet tall. Okay, Drew Brees is not the most athletically gifted guy ever. But if we're talking about the best quarterbacks to ever play the game, how can you not put Drew Brees in that category? He's done something that no one else has done. To me, that's exceptional. When you can do something better than anybody else has done it, better than Montana, better than Brady, better than your hero Patrick Mahomes, better than anyone else, he's done it. So in my opinion, not only is he up in the top tier category, if you want to start ranking them, right now I got him at 6, okay? Brady, Montana, Manning, Unitas, Elway, Drew Brees will be right there at number 6, Max. You can't take away what he's done. You can't take away what he's accomplished. And you can talk about the dome. You can talk about the passing era. I can name 20 quarterbacks that's played in the dome in the passing era, and they don't hold Drew Brees' jock. So let's not make excuses of why this man has been great, regardless whether he's retiring to yesterday or today or a year from now. He is great based on what he has done and what he's accomplished.
I respect the fact that you say he is there and then have him 6, because a lot of people who say he is there might have 8, 9, 10, 12 guys in front of him and then also say that, no, he's in that category. Here's my problem, Booger. And again, I take no joy in saying this the day he retires. I'll be that guy, though, since you're asking directly. He was normally not the best quarterback in the world. In fact, usually not top 2. And by most lights, maybe you feel differently, and you can back that up in an argument, but usually year in and year out, Brady, Rodgers, and Peyton, you'd take ahead of Drew Brees. Most people would. And then later on, some of the younger guys took his place. In fact, when I think of the all-time greats.
Based on what, Max?
Based on winning, based on who you'd rather have under center. Based on, by the way, Drew Brees was great, but how many times did he win the MVP? You know, how many times did you consider him a top three player in the world at his position? Or how many times top two? I don't know if I ever looked at Brees and said he's one of the two best quarterbacks in the world. If you did, okay, go ahead. But ahead of Rodgers, ahead of Peyton Manning, ahead of Tom Brady, and then in recent years, by the way, is he ahead on, or will he be ahead when all is said and done on the all-time list of, at their best, Steve Young or Russell Wilson, let alone of guys like Elway and Marino or Brett Favre? There are a lot of guys. It's not a knock on Drew Brees. There are a lot of great quarterbacks.
Peyton Manning,
Max,
Tom Brady. I mean, listen, I'm looking at all of these guys. John, now you want to throw them in there, that's fine. I got Drew Brees right outside the top five. Because I agree with Dan Orlovsky's list, with the exception of who did he have in there instead of on Montana at number five? He had somebody in there other than Montana at number five. He had Brees at number five, and without Montana, no, it would be Montana first, then Brees. That would be it for me. Go ahead, Booker.
Yeah, and Max, let's not bring up MVP awards. I think we've all seen you can be a really, really good player and not win MVP. Just look at LeBron James in basketball. Russell Wilson, until last year, hadn't even gotten a vote for the MVP. So let's not bring up awards to make an argument whether or not a guy deserves to be one of the all-time greats. You ask anyone who's played the position at a high level, Drew Brees has done, again, when you do something over the history of the game, Max, that no one else has done, how can you keep him out? And this is going back several years with all of these guys. The guy's the most accurate quarterback. And let's not forget, they gave up on him in San Diego. They drafted Phillip Rivers. So he easily could have took his tail and turned and walked away. But the perseverance that Drew Brees showed, to me, he became one of my favorite quarterbacks when he was down the bottom and he got with Sean Payton and he worked himself all the way back up to the top. You could almost say, Max, that this is a self-made, man-made superstar in this game. And to me, I think that's why he gets the respect, maybe more than some of the other guys that have been more talented, been in better situations, because he's done it the hard way.
Well, he's one of my favorites also. But, you know, like Steve Young, when I was a kid, if you said, what quarterback did I enjoy watching the most? You know, I'm a huge fan of Patrick Mahomes. When I was a kid, that was Steve Young. He was the most fun to watch. I loved watching him, but I wouldn't say he was top five all time just because he's a personal favorite. And Drew Brees, you're right, lots of guys played in domes. But among great quarterbacks who played in this era, the greatest era in the history of the game for passing, in a dome, Brees was the great quarterback who played under those circumstances and therefore compiled a lot of records because he was great. I'm not denying his greatness. But Brett Favre was considered, like when Brett Favre retired, a lot of people, I thought incorrectly, but still were arguing, it's the greatest quarterback ever. I don't think anyone makes that argument for Drew Brees. You hear people still argue that about Dan Marino or John Elway, which is why I include them. Forget about just MVP consideration. A lot of people say that's the best guy I've ever seen. Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. I've not heard that about Drew Brees. And while he was active, he was generally, as I said, there was Tom Brady, there was Peyton Manning, and Drew Brees was always like the last name on that list of those kind of guys in his era. So when you talk all time, I don't know how you get in the number. Yeah, in his era. But every era has a list like that. So if you're third or fourth in your own era, how are you going to be much better than ninth or tenth all time?
Because this is, we're going through one of the greatest eras of passing based on what you just said. Manning, okay, Brady, Mahomes is coming, Drew Brees. These guys have played for 20 years. It's been a long era. So his career has spanned a long time. So, yes, we are going through one of the best eras that we've ever seen. So he can be a part of this era and also be a part of the greatest of all time conversation.
All right. Boog, thank you so much for being with us. Great to have you. And we'll keep you on the screen right now. Stephen A., can I just see mini Stephen A. one more time? And what is he guiding everyone to do? Fill
the
out their brackets?
It's all about the brackets.
Mini Stephen A.
It's all about the brackets, Booger. It's all about the brackets, baby.
Real Stephen A.
Mini Stephen A. needs a tailor.